Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
Good evening, everyone. If you enjoy our show and find our research both interesting and informative, please can I ask that you consider leaving us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform. Something that small really does help us out a huge amount. You can also find out more about us and our work by heading over to deadsouls.co.uk and checking us out. We are a small team of 3 researchers with more than 70 years of experience between us. You can also find us and speak to us over on Instagram. Just search Dead Souls Social Club and we'll come up. So, as always, thank you so much for joining us tonight. This audio presentation contains graphic details of death, violence, and controversial subject matter. Listener discretion is strongly advised. From Dead Souls Media, this is When Romania Executed Their President. I'm Jamie Black, a researcher and psychologist, and I'll be your host for tonight. Just a small little excerpt from history tonight. A historical factoid that is barely remembered or talked about now. Yet it happened in Europe just 35 years ago. Tonight's episode is a short one before we drop a much meatier installment later this week. It's the middle of December 1989. We're in the Palace Square in Bucharest, and it's almost freezing. There are over 50,000 people who have been brought here. Many were taken straight from schools or their workplaces. Some have been standing in the cold for more than 5 hours, and they are all waiting for one man. Their national leader, Nicolae Ceaușescu. For more than 24 years, Ceaușescu has ruled Romania with an iron fist. A tyrant, if you will. A few days earlier, protests broke out in Timișoara, a city in western Romania. The protests were triggered by a local priest who had openly criticized Ceaușescu. The secret police, known as the Securitate, attempted to arrest the priest, and for the first time, locals resisted his arrest. Ceaușescu's soldiers immediately opened fire. Quickly, news had spread, and protests were erupting across the country. Desperate to restore his image, Ceaușescu calls for a mass rally in Bucharest to be broadcast live on national television. But it will prove to be the biggest mistake of his life. Nicolae Ceaușescu was born in Scormes Esti, a small village located in Alt County, Romania. Nicolae was the 3rd of 9 children born into a poor peasant family. He was born on the 23rd of January 1918. According to his autobiography, Nicolae was born on the 26th of January 1918. But this was actually incorrect. A 3-day delay in registering his birth caused by his father had led to the mix-up in many sources. Nicolae's father, Andruta, owned 7.5 acres of farmland and farmed a few sheep. Nicolae would support his family and contribute additional funds by working as a tailor in his younger years. Nicolae studied at the village school until he was 11, at which point he left the family home for Bucharest, choosing to run away from his extremely religious and abusive and strict father. Young Nicolae initially took a job as an apprentice shoemaker. His employer, Alexandru Sandelescu, was an active member in the Communist Party. His employment and influence by Sandescu led Ceaușescu to soon join the Communist Party himself. Ceaușescu was arrested in 1933 at the age of 15 for street fighting during a labour strike, and again the following year for collecting signatures on a petition of protest against the trial of railway workers. The Romanian secret police identified Ceaușescu as a quote-unquote dangerous communist agitator and distributor of communist and anti-fascist propaganda materials. Ceaușescu was sentenced on the 6th of June 1936 to 2 years in prison for these charges, plus a year of house arrest following this. He met his wife Elena in 1939, following his release from prison. They would marry in 1946, following the Second World War. Ceaușescu was a firm ally of the Soviets and was part of a communist welcome party that greeted the Red Army as it entered Bucharest in 1944. Ceaușescu spent most of the war in internment camps himself. At these camps, he and other communists were able to entice the guards with substantial bribes, and thus the camp authorities gave the communist prisoners a lot of freedoms in the running of their own cell block. The one caveat being that they did not attempt to break out of the camp. Following the Second World War, Romania gradually fell under the Soviet Union's sphere of influence. Ceaușescu would serve as the secretary of the Union of Communist Youth from between 1944 to 1945. Then, once the communists had seized power in Romania in 1947, Ceaușescu was elected a member of the Great National Assembly, which was the newly founded legislative body within communist Romania. The following year, in May of 1948, Ceaușescu was promoted to a position of Secretary of the Ministry of Agriculture, and again in March 1949 to the position of Deputy Minister. With no military experience to speak of, Ceaușescu was made Deputy Minister in charge of the armed forces, being immediately awarded the rank of Major General. He would soon be promoted once again to the rank of Lieutenant General. Ceaușescu became the first deputy to the Defense Ministry and head of the Army's Higher Political Directorate. He studied at the Soviet Frunze Military Academy in Moscow for 2 months between 1951 and 1952. In 1954, Ceaușescu became a fully fledged member of the Politburo, which would grant him one of the highest positions of power in the country. When the Romanian leader, the General Secretary of the Communist Party, George Georgiou Dei, died on March 19, 1965, Nicolae Ceaușescu was not his obvious successor. Yes, Ceaușescu and Georgiou Dei were long-time and close friends, but this counted for very little in the subsequent power vacuum. Widespread infighting by older and more connected officials led the Soviet Politburo to choose Ceaușescu as the compromise candidate. He was subsequently elected General Secretary on the 22nd of March 1965, 3 days after Georgiou Dei's death. Ceaușescu quickly established himself as a popular figure in Romania, but also in the West. Romania operated a foreign policy which was independent of Soviet Russia, which won trust from Western nations. Press censorship and Romania's active participation in the Warsaw Pact were ended early in Ceaușescu's tenure. He also refused to take part in the 1968 invasion of Czechoslovakia by the other Warsaw Pact nations. The Soviet Union tolerated Ceaușescu's recalcitrance, mainly because it gave the Soviet Union an opportunity to have an ally on the inside in discussions with the West. Although to the outside world, the USSR very much labelled Romania as an Eastern Bloc maverick state. Ceaușescu, however, through his foreign, economic and demographic policies, was focused on turning Romania into a major global player, a world superpower. To do this, Ceaușescu implemented an intensive industrialization program within Romania. He was dead set on economic independence for his nation and less reliant on the Soviet Union. Although Ceaușescu would refuse to incorporate economic liberalist measures. Further policies of national healthcare and improved national education standards were implemented under Ceaușescu's guidance. Both social and economic standards in the country improved massively in the 20 years following Ceausescu's rise to power. But despite all of these seemingly positive and progressive steps by the country, Ceausescu's popularity in Romania began to drop as early as 1968, and by 1989, it was at an all-time low. You see, under Ceausescu's regime, the Romani people in Romania were viewed as an ethnic minority and were largely neglected in almost all elements of society and culture. The Romani people had no governmental representation, and Ceausescu's policies almost entirely ignored their existence. On December the 10th, 1989, Czechoslovakian President Gustav Husák resigned from power. This directly led to the fall of the communist regime in Czechoslovakia. This meant that Romania was now the only remaining hardline communist regime within the Warsaw Pact states, and the USSR's power and influence was dwindling too. Laszlo Tokes was a Hungarian pastor who resided in the Romanian city of Timișoara. The Romanian secret police had accused Tokes of inciting ethnic hatred in December 1989, but Tokes resisted their arrest. He was supported by his church congregation in a very unusual show of support. The secret police were feared throughout the country, so this was not normal practice. Students soon joined Laszlo and the congregation, and a large-scale demonstration quickly erupted, which turned into an all-out anti-government protest. Romanian military forces, the mainstream police, and the Securitate secret police all fired on the protesters on the 17th of December, resulting in the deaths and severe injuries of men, women, and children. Ceausescu departed for a state visit to Iran while the protests were unfolding, leaving the suppression of the protesters to his subordinates and wife Elena. On the evening of December 20th, Ceausescu addressed the Romanian people in a televised speech where he blamed the protests on interference from foreign forces and an external aggression on Romania's sovereignty. This was a serious error on Ceausescu's part, however. You see, the state media was not broadcasting news of the protests, as the media was all government-controlled, and this meant that anyone outside the town of Timișoara had no idea that the demonstrations were happening. Ceausescu had misjudged the national feeling towards his government, in referencing the protests on television. This acted as a call to arms to citizens in other parts of the country, and thus revolts and demonstrations erupted all over Romania as a result. In a further attempt to quell the unrest, Ceausescu staged a mass meeting in Bucharest the following day on December the 21st. Official media presented it as a, quote, spontaneous movement of support for Ceausescu, unquote. Ceausescu stepped out onto the balcony of the Central Committee building in Revolution Square, Bucharest. As he waves to the crowds below, almost deafening cheers ring out. But something's wrong.
Dear comrades and friends, citizens of the capital of socialist Romania, first I desire to address you, the participants of this great popular meeting, to all residents of the Bucharest municipality, a warm greeting, a revolutionary greeting, and along with best wishes for success in all fields.
doresc de asemenea să adresez mulțumiri inițiatorilor.
I want also to express thanks to the initiators and organizers of this great event from Bucharest,
The crowd are largely standing completely still and in silence, except for a few government plants who have stood in the front rows and have been paid to cheer. But the cheering, for the most part, is fake. It's a pre-recorded audio track playing through huge speakers which have been erected around the square. As Ceausescu begins his speech, just as he starts to thank the organizers of the rally, there are screams from the crowd. This is not part of the pre-recorded track. Elena Ceausescu screams at her husband, quote, "Someone is shooting, take cover." They both hastily retreat inside the building. Ceausescu's security guard tells him that demonstrators have broken through the barriers and are heading towards the Central Committee building, the building where Ceausescu and his wife are stood at that exact moment. The camera crew who are filming the rally are instructed to cut away and film the sky. Security guards manage to hold the crowd back, but that won't last for very long. Ceausescu orders tanks, soldiers and his secret police to crush the protest by any means necessary. That evening, there's so much blood in the streets that the military has to hose it clean with huge water cannons. Ceausescu is relieved and convinced that the uprising has been defeated. Everything will now be back to normal, he tells Elena. But he's wrong. Before dawn arrives, masses of workers are leaving their factories and heading towards the city centre. The soldiers and police are sent in to control the crowd once again, but their focus and tone has now changed. The police and soldiers suddenly refuse to shoot and join the protesters themselves. This is a grave concern for Ceausescu. He immediately holds a crisis meeting with the members of the Politburo in the Central Committee building. Hundreds of thousands of demonstrators surround the building and begin to break in. With protesters now inside the building and just moments away from reaching Ceausescu, a helicopter lands on the building roof where both Nicolae and Elena are carried aboard by the bodyguards, both visibly shaken and fearful. Together with their bodyguards and two senior Politburo officials, they take off. The pilot immediately heads towards Ceausescu's residence to the north of the city. Ceausescu won't stay here for too long, however. Whilst at his official residence, he desperately tries to summon military support. But the answer that comes across the radio is clear. Ceausescu is on his own. He is convinced by his pilot to take off again. He instructs the pilot to fly towards the western city of Titu, hoping to reach a loyal garrison. But then, the pilot receives a message over the radio. All flights are to be immediately grounded. Any aircraft seen in the air will be shot down upon sight. So the pilot conducts an emergency landing. They have landed on a road between Bucharest and Targov East. Along with his wife and two security guards, Ceausescu commandeers a passing car. They are driven to the town of Targov East, all the while listening to the car radio en route, which plays news reports about the uprising's victory in Bucharest and the government being overthrown.
This is Radio Bucharest, Romania. This is Radio Bucharest, Romania. Listeners, following the great popular manifestations in the capital city of Romania, Bucharest, and all over the country, today, December 22, 1989, the dictatorial regime of Nicolae Ceausescu was overthrown. At 16:30 local time in Bucharest, created was the National Committee of democracy in Romania, whose main objective is the preparation for the passage to a democratic life in this country. The former prime minister and the entire former government resigned. Members of the National Committee of Democracy Romania are military commanders not compromised during the Ceausescu dictatorship, workers, higher education students that were in the forefront of the struggle for the overthrow of the former regime, as well as intellectuals. Shortly after the creation of this democratic organism, the members informed the nation about the resignation of the government and about the components of the National Committee of Democracy and about the measures proposed for the next period.
They arrive at the Agricultural Institute on the outskirts of the city, where the institute director welcomes them and escorts them to a small room where he assures them they will be safe. He locks them inside. Shortly after, local police arrive and arrest both Nicolae and Elena Ceausescu and hand them over to a nearby military barracks in the city. The newly established government is determined to bring both to trial as quickly as possible, and so the day after their capture, Ion Iliescu, the new Romanian head of state, signs a decree establishing a speedy military tribunal to be carried out right away at the barracks where they are being held. They're accused of genocide, of destroying the country's economy, and attempting to flee with over $1 billion in foreign banks. During the trial of Nicolae Ceausescu and his wife, their crimes are read out to them. Ceausescu laughs at the accusations. The trial, of course, is largely for show. It only lasts around 2 hours and takes place without any real defence or chance of appeal. Ceausescu refuses to recognise the court or its legitimacy. The tribunal finds both him and Elena guilty on all charges. Both are sentenced to death by firing squad, with the order to carry out the sentence right away. Ceausescu tries to appeal the decision, begging for a reconsideration. His request is denied. Before being led out of the room, Ceausescu turns to the security guards and says that he wants to be executed alongside his wife. They agree to this request. As soldiers begin to tie their hands with rope, Nicolae and Elena refuse to be restrained and put up a struggle. Both argue with the soldiers, saying there's no need for it and that they are not going to run. They are restrained anyway, and their pleas are ignored. They are then escorted out into the courtyard and placed against the rear wall of the barracks. Elena begins to scream and shout insults at the soldiers who are preparing their weapons. She starts crying. Nicolae remains calm and silent, staring forward, emotionless. Then Nicolae Ceausescu begins to sing the first line of the Internationale, the workers' international battle song. Here is the official transcript from the trial.
I do not recognize this court.
You have never been able to hold a dialogue with the people. You were not used to talking to the people. You held monologues and the people had to applaud, like in the rituals of tribal people. And today you are acting in the same megalomaniac way. Now we are making a last attempt. Do you want to sign this statement?
No, we will not sign. And I also do not recognize the counsel for the defense.
Please make a note. Nicolae Ceausescu refuses to cooperate with the court-appointed counsel for the defense. Mr. Chairman, we find the two accused guilty of having committed criminal actions according to the following articles of the Penal Code. Articles 162, 163, 165, and 357. Because of this indictment, I call for the death sentence and the impounding of the entire property of the two accused.
Even though he, like her, committed insane acts, we want to defend them. We want a legal trial. Only a president who is still confirmed in his position can demand to speak at the Grand National Assembly. If he no longer has a certain function, he cannot demand anything at all. then he is treated like a normal citizen. Since the old government has been dissolved and Ceaușescu has lost his functions, he no longer has the right to be treated as the president. Please make a note that here it has been stated that all legal regulations have been observed, that this is a legal trial. Therefore, it is a mistake for the two accused to refuse to cooperate with us. This is a legal trial, and I honor them by defending them. You have acted in a very irresponsible manner. You led the country to the verge of ruin, and you will be convicted on the basis of the points contained in the bill of indictment. You are guilty of these offenses even if you do not want to admit it. Despite this, I ask the court to make a decision which we will be able to justify later as well. We must not allow the slightest impression of illegality to emerge. The two defendants should also know that they are entitled to a counsel for defense, even if they reject this. It should be stated once and for all that this military court is absolutely legal, and that the former positions of the two Ceaușescus are no longer valid.
It is very difficult for us to act, to pass a verdict on people who even now do not want to admit to the criminal offenses that they have committed during 25 years and admit to the genocide, not only in Timișoara and Bucharest, but primarily also to the criminal offenses committed during the past 25 years. This demonstrates their lack of understanding. They not only deprive the people of heating, electricity, and foodstuffs, they also tyrannize the soul of the Romanian people. They not only kill children, young people, and adults in Timișoara and Bucharest. They allowed Securitate members to wear military uniforms to create the impression among the people that the army is against them. They wanted to separate the people from the army. You were so impertinent as to cut off oxygen lines in hospitals and to shoot people in their hospital beds. The Securitate had hidden food reserves on which Bucharest could have survived for months, the whole of Bucharest. Esteemed Mr. Chairman, I have been one of those who, as a lawyer, would have liked to oppose the death sentence, because it is inhuman. But we are not talking about people. I would not call for the death sentence, but it would be incomprehensible for the Romanian people to have to go on suffering this great misery and not to have it ended by sentencing the two Ceaușescus to death. The crimes against the people grew year by year. They were only busy enslaving the people and building up an apparatus of power. They were not really interested in the people.
After the Ceaușescus were taken outside, gunshots rang out. Now, this is a content warning. Beyond this point, listener discretion is strongly advised. The Ceaușescus were executed and their deaths broadcast on national television in Romania. It was also broadcast in several other European countries, namely Germany, Austria, Italy and France. The following audio is directly from that broadcast. Both Nicolae and Elena are resisting the ropes at this point. Nicolae and Elena are protesting their innocence and shouting illegal at the soldiers as they are led away.
Ce-i asta? Nu rupeți mâna, dați-mi drumul la mână!
Now, with their arms tied behind their backs, Elena and Nikolai are marched outside with their heads bowed low. The news broadcast then cuts to a scene outside the barracks. The next day, Romanian television news showed footage of the bodies of Nikolai and Elena at the foot of the barracks wall, a gruesome and uncensored image on national television. The two Ceausescus were now gone. In May of 1990, Romania held its first free election since 1937. Today, Romania is a socialist democratic republic. It is a member of NATO, the European Union, and an active participant in the United Nations. Nicolae Ceausescu's legacy is defined by his communist rule and cult of personality. The economic hardships his policies caused the Romanian people triggered widespread poverty, shortages, and misery for many. Many Romanians today choose to forget the years of Ceausescu's rule. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.